This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
No place to go. Ah, you're lucky to be here. So am I. Look out the window. Another beautiful day in Chicago. Hope you're having a great day already. Oh, you're not up yet. Sorry. Growing as a little kid, I always liked when the guy on the radio would be happy and upbeat and, you know, say, oh, it's going to be a beautiful day and all that. But I never quite understood it. Now, you know, as a really old guy, I do. You look out on the city, how could you not be happy?
And the humidity is going to be down today.
Right.
Turn off the air. Yeah.
That is a vintage Mary Vandeveld moment in time. Celebrating the humidity.
What are we, raised in a barn?
I'm so tired of air conditioning. I really want to open my windows and get some fresh air. Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a very nice day.
So the sneezing can begin once
again. Tomorrow, Mary, we're all going to be out at Channel 9.
Yes.
And tomorrow is the big back-to-school thing, back-to-school situation. And the Channel 9 Morning News does their, I don't know, is it 8th, 9th, 28th, 18th? I forgot already. They've done a bunch of these back-to-school specials, and they collect school supplies for kids that don't have them. So it's a very nice thing.
And it's great. It's going to be outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good thing.
Forecast good tomorrow, too, isn't it?
Yep. Warm and pleasant. Sunny skies. High of 81.
All right. Well, let's get this sucker started, shall we? It's the Steve Cochran Show. It's show number 1427. G, let me check in with you now. G. Suki's here, and this is your first week, and this is your fourth day. So what have you found in the first 3 days and 12 minutes that you'd like to change?
I'm just thrilled to be here, Steve. Thrilled.
Right now, as I walked in, there's a little tension between you and Mark Carmen because Mark is very energetic and upbeat, and he's annoying.
He was really all in my face. Like, he was, like, hopping up and down. He's like, gee, I have so much energy. I have so much energy today.
How much sleep did you get?
I don't really think I said it quite like that.
How much sleep did you get?
I went to bed last night, Steve. I think I started sleeping at 6, and then I was up for a little bit until 8, and then I was in and out of sleep until 10, and then I was done till a good 4:13. So I feel great.
You went to bed at 6?
So you got what amounts to 12 hours sleep.
Oh my gosh. Did you eat?
Well, hold on a second there, Mary, with your went to bed at 6. I did the show the night before.
And you got your 3 hours.
And then I worked after the show yesterday. I was on empty. A guy needs a little bit of
tired
but you
little fella.
Can't catch up with sleep.
It was a little
apparently
tense.
Apparently he can.
It was tense between us because, you know, this is my first week, day number 4, as you said. I'm adjusting. I'm like a newborn that's sleep training this week. And here he is. I'm tired. I'm happy to be here, but I'm tired. And this is what I'm greeted by.
Yeah, well, Mr. Happy.
Well, I was already...
Last thing we need is you and you're happy.
I was already crying in the sports office this morning, Steve. I don't know what happened, but I played Black Superman, the Muhammad Ali song.
Sure. Yeah.
And I don't know why I felt like doing that today, but I'm watching videos of Ali, and I'm thinking about how the world has just moved forward, and I'm weeping in the sports office at 5:30, so I was in a good mood.
I was just going to tell him that I was teasing and that I love it, but now I don't know.
If anybody wondered if people in show business are damaged, I think we've answered that question.
This is a great way to start the day. Steve Cochran Show.
Listen to Damaged Individuals, morning 6 to 10.
We do lose brain cells on this shift.
Yeah, there's no question. You've been getting up for how long? When did you start doing mornings for Collins?
Oh, well, here, 22 years.
22 years of getting up at 3 in the morning.
Well, but it's been more than that because I had other morning jobs before.
But Mary looks great.
That's it?
It has not hurt you in any way.
You know what the secret is?
What?
Heavy concealer.
I got. I was walking out with DeCoste yesterday, John DeCoste, musical director of the program, and I was complaining about catching a glimpse of my reflection in the glass and how old I am, because I'm not caught up or hung up on that at all. And he said, this is very helpful from a friend, he said, Is it like the presidential photos where they look pretty good when they get in, and then by the time they're done, they're really beaten to death?
Yeah, yeah, that's what it looks like.
I mean, you go back to 2013, I look like a relatively alive individual.
If you go back to your afternoon show back in the day, I mean, you look just fantastic, Steve.
Careful, yeah. Mark.
Fantastic. He looks fantastic.
And now I love the headshots.
Now he just, you know, looks fantastic. We'll just take out the
fantastic-er.
We'll just take the C off.
Looks alive. Yeah, he looks like he still has a pulse. All right, look, we got a lot to do today, and it's a very busy program as well. Chuck Todd is going to be on, as always. So will Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady, but they'll both be on the phone. We're going to do a wrap-up of Know Your Fiancé.
Great.
And we'll get to the top six here in a second, but we do need to check in with Mark on this. Henry Winkler will be on. God, I love Henry Winkler.
The best.
Yes.
Such a nice guy.
Yeah. Well, I've been loving him in Barry. So.
Oh, he's obsessed. So good in Barry. Well, you met him, haven't you?
No, I have not.
Oh, you love him.
I do love him.
Just a nice guy. Nice guy. Funny guy. Very funny guy, actually. And later on in the program, Jeremy Piven will be in studio. The Piven family, Chicago legends. And Jeremy Piven's doing stand-up. He's doing a special in town.
Has he done comedy before?
Yeah. Yeah, he started out doing some stand-up along with the acting, and he's gone back to it, so he'll be in to talk about that. And then an amazing young woman who is a Palestinian journalist, 13 years old.
Incredible.
In town doing a couple of speeches. All right, so we'll get to the top six. First, Mark Carmen, yesterday I asked you a series of questions, and that series of questions were about your fiancé. It's the second time we've gone through this. First time you failed the test. We're hoping you pass this time. And there were a couple of controversial moments. And then this whole Facebook thing blew up where on your Facebook status, you had listed really available ladies call me now. I think that's one of the drop down menu items.
That's not what was. Okay. I had. Go ahead, Steve.
You were concerned because Chelsea, your fiance, she heard it or heard about it. She said she was upset with you. And throughout the day yesterday, your words, not mine, you passively, aggressively avoided her because you were mad, you said. And then I said, you're mad or you were frightened? And you said, I was frightened.
See, there's just so many lessons to be learned here. Number one lesson, don't tell Steve anything about anything off the air. It's just a bad idea.
If you preface it with, this is all off the record, I'll probably forget most of it.
Right. No, she was texting during the show yesterday, and I thought that she was being serious, and she wasn't, and so I was a little bit bothered, and so I just chose not to address that immediately. I was, I had a busy day.
Well,
Steve,
you also had 2 hours sleep. You never know what you're going to say in 2 hours sleep.
Right. I had to go to lunch. There was a lot going on.
I had to go to lunch.
So, and then today, she's going to join us by phone.
Yes.
But the upside here is she wasn't mad at all.
Right, no, she thought it was funny, and she's like, yes, Barry's right. See, Steve's correct. You're a total this, that. I'm like, you know what? And then.
But it wasn't a fight. She was just.
She was just toying with you. Right.
Yes, because she's so smart.
She's like, I sent you a picture of an emoji of a bride and a coffee. Didn't you understand that was, I was having a good time? And then I'm like,
do
no,
you speak
I
speak emoji.
I don't speak emoji.
I'll give you some lessons, but I would have been. I think she's great because I would have been upset with you for passively aggressively you're frightened or not, avoiding me.
You know why?
Because
she speaks female.
Yeah, I would say you as a man should be able to just come forward. Talk about what's going on. Don't avoid me.
Do I have to pay for these sessions?
No. These are complimentary.
This is free. Yeah. Yeah, that happened too, G.
She told you to put your big boy pants on?
Well, no. I mean, after she realized that, after I owned up to being angry, then she was like, wait a second. You were mad this whole time and you didn't say anything? So then that came into play as well.
Yeah, because in the future,
I'm doing everything right over here.
In the future, you can't handle concerns that way, Mark.
Right. Of course. Me thinks that
there's
I get it.
Two keys to a long relationship. One is to find somebody that can stand you. The other is to talk. Talk.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You got to talk. You just got to talk. And you got
to
listen.
Don't go to bed angry, right? Do you do that, Steve?
You know, I thought about that, but Bridget Gaynor's mother was in here. Bridget Gaynor's mom, her husband passed last summer, but very long, successful marriage. And she said, and I'm only partly paraphrasing here, that's a bunch of crap. She goes, go to bed, you get some rest, you get up in the morning, and you move on.
I just said that. Yeah, you're of a totally different perspective. You forget about it. So, yeah, well, some of it.
Or do you just pick it back up in the morning?
It depends on what it is, right?
Believe me, after 34 years, you can go to sleep on it.
You're just stuck together after that many years, right?
You got to find somebody that can stand you. That's the fine words of Mrs. Carl Reiner.
Sometimes I can't stand myself, so I don't know. That's hard.
Yeah, walk in this morning, and I tell you how I like your
I'm
hair.
I'm sorry.
How nice your hair
don't
looks.
Talk about it, Steve.
No, and you made fun of yourself. I won't have it.
I'm self-deprecating. It's a little, it's too much, I know.
Were you passively, aggressively angry with yourself when I walked in?
Yes, constantly. Self-loathing over here. This is the other spectrum of people that are in this business.
That's front and center.
So let's review. You're a puss, I'm old, and you're self-loathing.
Yes, exactly.
Show over. Are we done?
We're a great bunch, you know? We should just have a psychiatrist come in and examine all three of us.
You see somebody in a car right now patting their radio? Hey, you guys, it's going to be okay. Chuck Todd, when we come back. Chuck Todd, top six when we come back.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
I want to say hi to everybody in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. We're thinking about you. Got slammed by a storm yesterday. Steve, do we know if that was a tornado?
No, it just was straight line winds and a bad thunderstorm.
Yeah, really awful. A bunch of pictures on the text line this morning, so we're thinking about you guys and wishing you well and all that. All right, let me get to this. Number one, President Donald Trump told reporters about Air Force One on Wednesday he's very strongly considering commuting the federal corruption sentence of disgraced and imprisoned former Illinois Governor Rob Blagojevich. Trump said, "I thought he was treated unbelievably unfairly. He was given close to 18 years in prison. A lot of people thought it was unfair." That's a common Trump move, by the way. When you're saying something, you emphasize it with "a lot of people think it, and you think it too." One of those type of comments. And then you go, "Wow, this guy's such a jackass. I don't know how to argue with him." He said, "A lot of people thought it was really unfair, like a lot of other things. It was the same gang, the Comey gang, and all these sleazebags that did it." Once again, the words of unity from the president, as he promised just the other day. Rob Blagojevich is in year
seven
of 18.
Yeah.
And the damage that he did to the state of Illinois through his mismanagement and his corruption is really hard to quantify to the levels that he damaged this state. You know, you may well believe, and I know a lot of people that believe 18 years was too much and it was unfair. What was unfair is that he stole from the state and the damage he did to the state. I feel for his daughters. I really do.
And I have a question this morning about the timing of all of this. Was this to deflect about the optics from yesterday? What day that should have been about the victims of all of these shootings and these visits? Why do we have to talk about this on that same day?
I just don't think there's any rhyme or reason.
Yeah, that's I tend to agree with you on all counts, because he gets up and he opens his mouth and it begins.
And then he was doing the rage tweeting.
Yep, all day yesterday after he got on Air Force One, after what seemed like at least a save of a positive experience by visiting the hospitals where the wounded from Dayton and El Paso were, and then he left and he ripped on the mayor of Dayton, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, and others. And it's
mind-boggling.
Yeah. Putting and Chuck Todd Moore coming up.
Putting out basically a promotional video of you in a hospital around mass shootings is a level of narcissism that I don't think we'll ever see again.
Well, his web guy, and I'm not exaggerating here, his web guy was his caddy. He was his caddy at his golf club in New Jersey. And he eventually went to work for him, and now he's one of his lead communications guys. His web guy, his caddy, his comms guy, Dan, is it Scavino? Put out a tweet afterwards, said he was treated like a rock star at the hospital. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say you missed the point.
The Washington Post, by the way, is reporting that none of the eight El Paso victims being treated at the hospital where he was at met with him, wanted to meet with him.
Wow.
So.
Okay. Next, the Lake County Sheriff's Office is warning residents of a rise in phone and computer-based scams targeting residents of that area. Scammers calling residents claiming to be computer repair companies who accidentally deposited money into the person's bank account, then asked for them to return the money by purchasing a gift card. You need to talk to your parents, your grandparents about this, or maybe you need to hear this message yourself. If somebody calls and offers you a gift card of any kind, it is an absolute scam. It is not done that way. If somebody calls and says, that we have a service to provide, but you're going to have to provide us funds to open an account to establish this service, doesn't happen. If somebody calls, says they're from the IRS doesn't call anybody.
And that's what my mom fell for.
That's right. IRS. You told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's a very smart lady, but it's just a very convincing phone call, and you're not prepared for it. You're just caught off guard.
What about the Nigerian prince when he called?
No, that one's true.
Is that one true?
Yeah, okay. That one's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm still working on it.
My Prince Charming.
That IRS call is flat out terrifying if you haven't get it. We are coming to arrest you if you don't give us money now.
That's what they told me.
Unless you listen to the entire thing where the English is broken and it makes no sense.
Right, right.
But then my mother is speaking to them in broken English.
Well,
it's back and forth.
Yeah, that's true. Next, Democrats in Congress putting the brakes on Republicans' quick hug of the red flag laws, which allow guns to be taken from people deemed dangerous. How will they be deemed dangerous remains to be seen. Senator Chuck Schumer in New York insisted that any gun-related legislation must be accompanied by a House bill requiring background checks on all gun buyers. The key to this entire argument is to not let it go on so long that both sides quit. And don't believe that won't happen, because it could. Everybody needs to remain angry and remain inspired. Puerto Rico has a new governor, Wanda Vasquez, the Secretary of Justice, sworn in as the third governor in 5 days after the territory's Supreme Court forced her predecessor, Pedro Pierluisi, to step down less than a week into his term. The justices ruled that he had been sworn in on unconstitutional grounds, as Puerto Rico, an American territory with American citizens, needs a lot of help. Next, Uber's coming to a public transit situation near you. The ride-hailing company has teamed up with cities and transit agencies in the U.S., Canada, Britain, and Australia to provide tickets, transport people with disabilities, and operate as an in-town's entire public transportation system. This is the next area Uber wants to take over your town. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying this is what could be coming. You got a smaller town, and you need sort of a mass transit that you don't have, or an ability to get to whatever the mass transit is. They're your hookup.
Keep raising the bar, I guess, for Uber. See an opportunity.
And then there's this. 5-year-old Manuel Bechara called 911 Friday. He told the dispatcher he was hungry. When he wanted to order a pizza. The Sanford, Florida Police Department said officers were dispatched to the house thinking a well-being check was needed. They found Manuel and his 15-year-old sister, who explained they were fine. Manuel had grabbed the phone without her knowledge. The officers decided to use this moment to explain why 911's important, and then ordered a large pizza to be delivered to the little boy and his sister.
Aww. Aww.
The police department put a disclaimer on the post. Don't call 911 for delivery. That's your hashtag of the day. All right, that's your top six at six.
Top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
We had an amazing day. As you know, we left Ohio, and the love, the respect for the office of the presidency, I wish you could have been in there to see it. I wish you could have been in there. And it was no different here. We went to the hospital, just came from the hospital. We were there a lot longer than we were anticipated to be.
He just doesn't get it. It's just not about him. He just doesn't get it. I don't even know. I don't know, Chuck. I don't know. Some days I feel just like I need to lay down. Chuck Todd's here from Meet the Press and MTP Daily. There's nobody better than Chuck. And I'm going to be honest with you, Chuck. Aside from being, you know, my friend, I just got to tell you, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you do it every day.
You know, a lot of people, I get that phrase a lot. That phrase a lot, especially in like in moments like this. And I always say, look, I have a job to do. This is the job I chose. I feel worse for people who don't do this for a living, because at least I can, you know, feel like I can cover something, focus on a different angle, you know, maybe change the conversation in a way that whatever it is. It's worse when you're just watching this and you feel as if this guy's manipulating the system, and you feel as if there's not much you can do about it.
Point taken.
Donald Trump was Donald Trump.
No, but I'm saying point taken, because you, I have a duty. You have a duty. We all have a duty to be engaged.
Right.
to the point where you can bring this up and continue to bring this up. But I'm able to get away from it a little bit. You know, I mean, this is a,
right.
this is a mass appeal show. We talk about sports. We talk about other things. I'm just saying you have to swim in this pool so long. At some point, if I have to talk you off the ledge, just call.
No, you know, it's funny you say that. I had a guy on my podcast yesterday whose beat is the dark web. Like, this has been his beat to try to understand these dark forces that are on there. And he's been doing it for a couple of years now. It started because his friend was one of the people killed on live television, remember, in Roanoke?
Oh, yeah.
Roanoke, Virginia.
Yeah.
Anyway, and, you know, that's when it was then that he discovered that there was this idea that the people thought it was staged, that it didn't really happen, that these were, quote, crisis actors. And so he started going down this road. And I asked him the same question. I said, how do you not get PTSD dealing with these people, the 8chans and the 4chans of the world? And you know, that's the thing. You have to take breaks. I mean, you know, every time I think this is a horrible beat, you know, I think about a guy like that who really is a tough beast. I'm sorry. Or you think about people in actual war zones. I guess the sad thing is I was having a conversation with one of my embeds, and they said their parents told them, well, we always didn't want you to be in a war zone, but I guess we're in the United States of America now, so maybe you can't hide from it. And yeah. I just thought that was just such a sad reality of where we are today.
Yeah, it's sad and profound. The he doesn't get it piece of this is striking. Again, I don't know how many people are connecting with that today.
Are we striking now? I mean, you
well,
know,
no, no, but course, it's striking because
he took a day of grieving and turned it into a day of grievances.
I don't know, dude. I think this is different.
News had he not done it. Right, there'd been news that he not.
Well,
done.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's striking to me because we literally have funerals that haven't happened yet. And the point being, we continue to go to the rabbit hole. We go deeper and deeper in the rabbit hole to a point where it's just evident that this guy's got something so wrong with him that he can't even stop for a moment to recognize any grief, any pain of any kind. And that's a very dangerous position for the most powerful man in the world.
It is. I mean, he's, we keep coming back to this word, you know, if he were immoral, it would mean he understood right from wrong. I guess he's amoral. That's why everybody concludes, you end up concluding he must be amoral, because it just doesn't make sense to me that you would behave the way you did, the way he did yesterday, under any circumstance when you're dealing with death. And it was just, and it becomes, it's one of those things you're, I don't understand why there isn't more frustration and outrage by his behavior. You know, you talk to Republicans and they say, well, that's what I expected. You know, that's what, of course he did it that way. You know, what more do you expect? And it's like, he's the president of the United States. We should always expect more. We should always expect more. And I think he ought to, you know, by not, here's what's the problem is with Republicans who stay silent and don't criticize him. It ends up normalizing this behavior.
Yep.
They're helping to normalize this behavior. And his whole goal is to redefine what is corrupt. I mean, that's what this Blagojevich thing is about. I couldn't be more outraged about it because it has nothing to do with Blagojevich.
Right.
It has nothing to do with anything other than he wants to redefine corruption as a misdemeanor for his own benefit.
Right.
And that's what everybody needs to understand what this Blagojevich thing is about. He wants to make it seem as if political corruption is an everyday thing. And so that way what he does doesn't look so bad.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's the same thing he's been pulling in New York for years.
That's right.
I never asked you this, but did you see this cowardice coming in any way, shape, or form? Because I didn't, certainly. But you've been in Washington forever. And
what do you mean by that, cowardice?
The Republican cowardice of going from where we were in 2015 and 2016 to now where nobody dares speak up. I assume they all have mirrors in their home. I assume they still have to answer to children and families. But yet it doesn't seem as if they do. I did not see this mass cowardice of not taking on the president when he's so wrong.
Yeah, well, history said we should have seen the cowardice coming, you know, on that front. And so I was probably naive to the point where I thought Paul Ryan would put up more of a fight.
Same here.
I thought he would. I thought he had he had a backbone in there that was stiffer than it turned out to be. And look, and it may have been, you know, he'll argue that there wasn't much he could do, believe it or not. And I would say, yeah, but you know what? Get caught trying. Right? Get caught
trying. Great point.
You know, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I'm sure plenty of people wish they would have stopped Joe McCarthy at moments when they thought they had an opportunity to stop Joe McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess these folks have to live with themselves. And, you know, they rationalize it by saying, oh, there's nothing I could have done. Or they say, well, it's your fault in the media. But the lack of taking responsibility for allowing this virus into the American political system. Look, I do think there will be a reckoning, but it won't be until Trump leaves office.
Jisoo Kyi is here, Chuck. G is delightful and a new addition to the program. And G's added Chuck. Chuck G.
Hi, Chuck. He did stick to script pretty well with the speech right after the tragedy. So someone at certain points is able to get through to him. Who is able to get through to him and make him stick to script when it's absolutely necessary? And why aren't they getting through to him more?
Well, I don't know if I accept the idea that he sticks to script, meaning he reads a teleprompter.
Right.
There's teleprompter temperament. And within less than 48 hours, whatever he said, he undermines himself, right, on that front. So I guess what you're saying is somebody convinces him to read the teleprompter for 2 hours,
right, yeah,
something like that. And he says,
but that's usually Ivanka? A very hard on thing this, for him to do.
Right. The only person is Ivanka. The only person that gets through him on that stuff is Ivanka. So and so that's how he gets talked into, you know, you've got to do the Ivanka and Jared. But it's usually Jared only gets through to him when he uses Ivanka. It is the one person he listens to. It's the when the more I've learned, if there is one other person he cares about other than himself, it is Ivanka. I don't know if I'd say the same thing about the rest of his kids, but definitely with her. So she gets through to him. It's why he is it's why his language is soft on guns. This is an issue she pushes him pretty hard on. So that's why his initial instinct is always to try to please her and say what she wants to hear about background checks. And then what happens, right? His political allies get into his ear and suddenly he backtracks. But she is the one person that gets through him. But it's usually only temporary, as we've seen with this.
Are the Democrats collectively or individually strong enough to do anything to move the ball forward when it comes to stopping some of this carnage?
I don't know. Look, I do think the fact is you have Republicans that would rather talk background checks than white supremacy. Now, some of that is more about they don't want to have the white nationalist conversation. But I also believe the gun issue is changing. I had a Republican strategist who worked at the House side on the House campaign arm last cycle. And he said they saw it in all of these suburban districts in Texas last cycle, that the gun issue just, that what used to work for them on the gun issue wasn't working. That there was a new concern. It was people that used to not care about the gun issue as a voting issue were suddenly caring as a voting issue. And so there is real concern in the Republican side that something has flipped, and that's why you're seeing more and more of them, at least rhetorically, come after more, a tougher background check. Even more than I expected, come out at least to look at some form of the assault weapons ban. So I do think this is one of those issues that's turning, and it helps explain, besides Trump, why the suburbs, the purple or lean red suburbs are starting to become purple to lean blue suburbs.
We had one striking development outside of all of this, tough to talk about bad news this week, and that's that J.J. Watt broke a child's bicycle in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
That was tragic.
Mark, Carmen, you may not know this. Chuck is a Packer fan. We still like him.
Wow.
But the tradition of riding the bikes is a big deal, and JJ broke the child's bike.
I want to know why a Houston Texan thought they could do that. You know, look, I'm with Aaron Rodgers. I don't know how I feel about this whole joint practice business.
Right.
You know, on one hand, I do get it's a lot easier to hit somebody on another team than it is to hit your own teammate. Right, that's the theory of the case on these things. But now you've ruined a kid's bicycle. When will it end? When will this end?
And have we heard a word from Congress on this? No, nothing.
Not a thing. Unregulated. Just letting any old willy-nilly non-Green Bay Packer ride a bike is just, you know, it's criminal. It's criminal. It should be outlawed.
It's Chuck Todd MTP Daily today. The podcast, get it everywhere. That's the Chuck Toddcast. And by the way, I'm going to be nagging you to do my podcast soon, so we got to find somewhere in your schedule.
Count me in. I'm happy to, you know, test the end of my career at any moment in time.
That's why I'd like you to be there. And meet the press Sunday. Don't do a Sunday without it. Thank you, my friend.
You got it. Thanks, Steve.
See ya. That's Chuck Todd.
I think it's actually an interesting question. What's more likely that we'll get gun legislation passed, good background checks, which seemingly everybody wants, or will we do something on the kid's bicycle first? What do you think?
I think the kid's bicycle at this point would even get arguments in Congress.
Right. Yeah.
Or a commutation for Blagojevich before gun control.
Right. Yeah.
I think they should just be locked up until...
JJ what?
No. Everybody in D.C. until they finally do something.
I still maintain there's a flush handle somewhere in D.C. and if you hit it, we get to start over.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. Here comes
the sun. Thanks for all the nice texts, and thanks for all the texts, including the ones that really aren't nice at all. Here's a great way, by the way, to not get your text read on the air. It's a texter from the 269 area code. Read my damn text on the air. Well, get your own show. You? I'm sure you can read all of your texts on the air once you do that. And there's several others here, including one that claims Trump could cure cancer, and I would still call him out and disagree with him. Well, of course I would. Yeah, absolutely. I would congratulate him. I would thank him. I would laud him for that. And I would continue to point out why he's not fit to be the president of the United States. But he would be a heck of a laboratory scientist, and we never would have seen that coming. It's a minute before 7. Here's what's coming up at 7 o'clock hour. Pat Brady from DuPage Airport. He works for the West Suburban Airport on a number of issues, but we'll be talking about a number of things with him involving politics, as we will at the end of the hour with Eric Edelstein. Know Your Fiancé and a great MVPP all coming up later on. The Fonz, Henry Winkler and Jeremy Piven in studio after 9. Back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next on 720 WGN. Don't forget about the Steve Cochran Everything podcast. This week's guest, really an amazing couple, Joe and Renee Silberman, amongst others. They had parents that survived the Holocaust. It's not an easy conversation, but it's one I think you'll find interesting. The WGN Radio app is a great place to get all the podcasts, WGNradio.com/Cochran. Well, it'll work there as well.
Your Harry Potter facts were not accurate. Who did the research?
There was not a specific direction to do the research on Harry Potter, but the inability to learn the product, and there was an issue in the...
Was that their inability or your inability?
I suppose I should have directed everybody else to learn the product. I will say that's sort of an axiomatic thing that you might want to do as you understand what the challenge is. I thought convey to them what the challenge was, what we should do, collaborate with them over the phone with the limitations having the other project.
You should have seen it coming. It was so colossally stupid. This heavy, dramatic takedown conversation between businessman Donald Trump, fraud undiscovered on a national basis, and criminal Governor Rod Blagojevich. You know, the Harry Potter thing wasn't my fault. Good God. The parallel universe continues. Pat Brady, where are you today?
I'm on my way down to Morris Airport. I'm going to fly the Stearman up to DuPage Airport for the back-to-school event they do every year.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
A bunch of kids come out, see the planes. It's a Sunday.
Explain what the Stearman is.
It's a World War II biplane built in 43. My brother Kevin and I own it, and it was actually the original trainer that the World War II pilots went into. George H.W. Bush learned how to fly in a Stearman. It's open cockpit biplane. It's a lot of fun.
And even though you and I are very good friends, you have continued to suggest I not go in the Stearman with you because you think I might hurt myself getting into it.
No, I'd love to take you up. I fly over your house and throw stuff down there.
All right, let's talk about a number of things. One is the shrinking Republican Party. You brought this up to me the other day, and you were talking about this before the mass evacuation started. When guys like Will Hurd who's one of the more moderate, sensible voices in whatever's left of the Republican Party, say, nope, I'm out. What's going on here? We got, what, a dozen Republicans who said they're not going to run?
Yeah, a dozen have left, which is not completely unusual, but it's more than normally leaves. But even equally startling, yesterday there was a article about in Orange County, the home of Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon, there are now more registered Democrats than Republicans. That's Orange County, California. So the demographic changes the party hasn't adjusted to on a more micro basis. You see that here in Illinois, where we had a we lost a bunch of seats in DuPage County, which used to be solid Republican land. So the party needs to trim its sails and adjust and come up with a better message to attract voters that aren't necessarily white males. And with the current president, we're going just the opposite direction.
Who's
going
to lead the Republican Party in that direction?
I don't know. Everybody you talked to, I heard Chuck kind of mention it a little bit. It's going to take years to clean up the mess from Trump whenever he leaves on the damage he's done to the brand of the party. I went back after I read that article over the weekend. I read the autopsy that we did back. Actually, I was still on the Republican committee, national committee. And we did this autopsy on the party and basically said, we need to attract more people of color. We need to attract more women. We need to attract more young people. We can't just be the party of old white males. And none of that was done in 2016. In fact, we're going just the other direction. So this has all been predicted, and people tried to stop it from happening, but the president continues to do it.
Yesterday, or was it the day before, the Agriculture Secretary Perdue was in Wisconsin talking to Wisconsin farmers, and they're upset. This farm subsidies thing that is to be paid out is not going to get it done, and they're not looking for a handout. They want to be able to farm. They want to be able to do it at a fair price. And Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said, inexplicably, unable to read the room, what do you call two farmers in a basement? A wine cellar, W-H-I-N-E cellar. Not surprisingly, he got booed. If Trump loses the farmers, well, I mean, what's going to happen there?
Well, the two, we talked about this last week, we checked the two most important states in this election are Michigan and Wisconsin. Those are the states that carried the president over the line in 2016. So if he loses farmers, he loses those two states. That depends. The Democrats have to turn out. African-American voters did not turn out in the Detroit area and the Milwaukee area, so that has to happen too. But you lose the farmers, he's going to lose. But more important to me, there are, as much as people may be upset with them now, there are some really good Republican that are still conservative members of Congress that need to be back in Congress, or we're going to get this crazy left agenda that Elizabeth Warren, some of these folks talk about. So I'm more concerned with down ticket than I am with the president. The president is who he is. I hope he loses, but I don't want the rest of the people that are actually good Republicans, I don't want them to lose.
This trade war that we're engaged with in China, is there any win in it? I mean, the basic premise that China's taken advantage of us and stolen our intellectual property and has not adhered to any of the world rules that the rest of us have to adhere to, that's absolutely true. Trump's not the first to say it, and it's good that he did say it and continues to say it. But this isn't a way to do it.
No, and to me, it's the equivalent, basically, of George Bush going to Iraq alone. You can't do this unilaterally. We had the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we could have gone in with a huge coalition of countries and diminished China's impact on the global economy. We could have dealt with other countries, but he got out of TPP and decided to do this on his own. And history, go back and read some history, trade wars don't work. They're certainly not what conservative Republicans are supposed to believe in, but he continues to do it. He's kind of got his back against the wall right now because the Chinese, a dictatorship, they can tell their people what to do. They can go a long time with people angry at them. That same thing can't happen in the United States. You're seeing it when you talk about with the farmers. I mean, we had an election coming up here in 13 months or 14 months, whatever it is. So it's a different, it's just two different environments. But I think he's mishandled. I think it's finally starting to hit him. And the volatility in the stock market and some of the fears, the long-range economic forecasts, you're seeing fear in those forecasts. I think this trade war is really going to have an impact.
Pat Brady's here. Pat is a fan of Jisoo Ki, as so declared to me this week. Gee, say hi to Pat.
Hey, Pat.
Hey, how's it? Kind of creepy sitting there next to Cochran.
You know, we're doing pretty good. It's only day four, though. I'll let you know in
That's
the future.
Good point. That's a very good point.
I kind of just wanted to have your thoughts on how you think the president has done in the last couple of days. I know that your good pal here gets a lot of text messages from people that are upset with him, but I feel like, what's your message to people that are still supporting the president, and also what your thoughts are on Mitch McConnell as well, and how the two of them have handled the past couple of days? I think it'd be good for listeners to hear it from your point of view as well.
I think they're both idiots. I agree with Steve.
Yeah, I mean, this is amazing.
I've never seen, at the presidential level, lack of empathy, the teleprompter speech. He's incapable of empathizing with anybody. Presidents historically rise to these occasions. Bill Clinton did it, George H. Bush did it, all of them, Reagan, everybody. He is simply incapable of doing it. And people get murdered here by a domestic terrorist, and he can't show any empathy. But these guys, both of them, they don't get it. So I'm fully on board with Steve on this, and I'm sorry if people get upset about it, but it's just not. We should expect better from the president.
Mark Carman, you get the last word.
Pat, I'm just curious. President Trump said that there's not an appetite to do things as far as gun legislation with the assault rifles. 75%, if not more, support it. Mitch McConnell won't hear it. This appetite seems to be the people are behind it. Why is there not an appetite in Congress? Because if they're just trying to protect themselves, it seems like the play is to do something.
Yeah, I saw that poll this morning, and I agree with you. I don't understand it, but Mitch McConnell is in trouble in Kentucky electorally, and so is the president. So I don't know what their play is, but I don't want to overreact and get too angry about this, but the last couple of days have been really frustrating to watch, where family members, people are murdered, and the president and the leader of the Senate don't want to do anything about it, and the people want something done. But you know what? And we've been saying it for years. There's an election coming up, and you got to get out and vote. If you don't like this, you got to get out and vote.
Amen, man. Fly safely. Thanks, bud.
See you guys. Thanks.
There you go. It's Pat Brady. Next Generation Strategies. And, you know, one of the really good guys. So is Eric Adelson. He'll be on in about a half an hour. Got an MVPP for you in just a second. That'll make you feel good.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by MegaPros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
Sounds like a big honor. Of course it is. It's very stressful. That kind of pressure. Most valuable person on the planet. But yes, for 24 hours, you must maintain your status as someone changing the world in a positive way. So we're proud to welcome to the show Ivy Marcucci. Good morning, Ivy.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Where are you going to school?
I go to Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah.
No, it's beautiful out there, isn't it?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. It's amazing. I love it. It's so perfect for me.
Are you still there? Or are you back home for a bit?
I'm back home in Riverside, Illinois right now because that is where my treatments, I did them in Chicago, and my family is from Riverside, Illinois.
All right, so talk about the challenge you have.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in December 2018 when I was home from winter break for Christmas break. I noticed that my eyes were starting to go double vision, and so I went into the ER and got an MRI. My dad's an ER doctor, so I went to his, and they came back with the MRI results, and they're like, yeah, you have a classic case of MS, and it's really aggressive.
That's the kind of thing that nobody should ever hear. But you're a healthy, happy 18, 19-year-old girl in college. It's one of the most exciting points of your life. It must have been devastating.
Right, yeah. It was crazy. It didn't really feel real. And it was kind of like, okay, well, what do we do now? What are my options? I've never met anyone with multiple sclerosis, let alone one of my peers.
So your dad being a doctor had to make a huge difference.
Oh, for sure. Actually, him being a doctor really pushed for me to get the best treatment, and we're so lucky because he was able to get in contact with Dr. Burt from Northwestern University in regards to the HSCT stem cell program.
Now, tie in Selma Blair to this. Most of you know Selma Blair, the actress, and she was pretty courageous in talking about her MS, but you have the same strand, if that's the right word?
Yeah, so we actually got the exact same treatment from the exact same doctor at the exact same time. I found out on her discharge day, she posted a photo, I'm sure you saw it, And I looked at the room, her hospital room, where she had her yellow bike in it. And I said, wait a minute, this is my room. I recognize this.
How about
she's
that?
Here right now.
How about that?
She's on the same floor as me.
So did you guys get a chance to talk?
No, I didn't end up seeing her. And of course, HIPAA violations and everything.
Yeah.
I did not hear that she was on the floor. But I just saw that she was. I think she posted it right after she got discharged. So I think that because it was her last day, and I was only a couple days behind her because I left the hospital, I think, 3 days after her.
So what do you want people to know?
You know, I think the biggest thing is that this HSCT stem cell transplant for MS works. There's lots of great data on it. People are having life-changing results, and the insurance companies need to cover it because my family had to pay out of pocket.
And pay out of pocket means to the tune of $125,000, where your family had to refinance their house.
Yeah. I mean, no one has $125,000 just sitting around, and it's just, you know, it's not fair that not everyone can get this medical access, because I know there's plenty of people like me out there who are like, I need this extreme treatment, and if I don't get it in the next couple of years, I'll be in a wheelchair. But insurance companies are slow, and so they can't get it.
You know, the funny thing about that, too, is G is here. G, say hi to our friend Ivy.
Hello, Ivy.
This is kind of a pay me now or pay me later thing. Mm-hmm. Not to be crass about it, but you take care of somebody like Ivy in this situation now, not only are you doing the right thing, the humane thing, and the better science thing, frankly, you're just waiting, if you don't, for it to be much, much worse medically, and you're going to pay down the road. So I don't even understand the business model, Ivy. I don't understand why it's better to not cover it.
Exactly. And the MS medications, not only do they not have as great data, they also are more expensive. It ends up being around $60,000 a year to be on the medicine.
Wow. Holy cow.
And I would be on it my whole life.
And then, Steve, think about all the things, the incredible accomplishments that Ivy is going to do.
Yeah.
Already
right.
Talking about this treatment. So how has the treatment affected you? How have you been feeling? How effective has it been?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a stem cell transplant, so it was the worst 2 weeks of my life.
Sure.
But totally worth it. You know, the recovery period is about a year long, but right now, I'm back at home. I'm starting to recover. I haven't felt any numbness or tingliness at all yet, and I don't think I will. And then in a year out, I think that I will genuinely feel like a brand new person, like me, but 200 times better without having a disease burden.
And we know by some of the best minds in science in the world what stem cell transplants can do if we get beyond the myths.
Mm-hmm.
And the political blockades that frankly screw up so many things. It seems like a fair question. You're young. I'm sure you were very healthy prior to this. Did you have a better shot of coming through this in the way you did than if somebody were older and less healthy?
That's a good question. So actually, a lot of the people who have done the trials, they were older, like in their 40s or 30s, some even older than that. And I am the ideal candidate because my body's young. I can handle it better. I can handle the chemo. But even the older patients, they do really well with it. But the problem is that we need to get this approved and more available so that people can do this earlier, because it does work better for the people who are first diagnosed and this is what they attack it with.
Well, God bless you. I mean, look, there's nothing but upside from here, and it sounds like you're over the, quote, worst part for now, and hopefully you won't have to deal with any sort of slap back, and just continue to be brave like you have been and talk about it like you are. I mean, that's the most amazing thing, is you're out there talking about it.
Totally, and I have to tell you that my insurance company is Blue Cross Blue Shield Illinois, and they did not cover my necessary treatment.
And we would like very much for Blue Cross Blue Shield to step up. I'd put somebody on here from Blue Cross Blue Shield tomorrow to talk about why they don't cover.
Absolutely.
So, thank you, Ivy. Awesome. Have a great couple of days.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. You guys have a great day.
Ivy Marcucci. How about that? Right?
Yeah.
Sounds like $1 million. All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. Stand by. We're just minutes away from the fiance. Chelsea will join us next. Is that right?
I got a call. I got to get out of here.
Let's see how Mark's question answers match with Chelsea. News first, next 720 WGN. What is the one chore she says you never do?
One chore I never do.
Yeah.
Can we say fix things? Can that fall under a chore?
Like, what needs to be fixed at your place right now?
Like a light bulb.
Oh, well, that is difficult. Yeah, I mean.
You got to get up there, Steve.
Clearly, Carmen, there's no answer. There's no answer to the light bulb conundrum. How could you possibly fix that?
Thank you.
Blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche. Another owner in the night.
In just moments, the lovely Chelsea will be joining us, the fiancé. And Chelsea Gideon and Mark Carmen will be married, well, sooner than later.
She's really looking forward to this, Steve.
When you say that, you mean she's really not looking forward to it?
Correct, correct. Okay. Yeah.
Well, let's start by giving her credit for doing it. Good morning, good morning, Chelsea. Thank you for being on.
Good morning.
All right, so Chelsea, look, even though we haven't met, you know I'm a fan. And I have no doubt that you and Mark are going to have a wonderful long life together. Having said that, I see this as growth for Mark.
Thanks, Steve.
I see this as an opportunity of growth for him to learn more about, you know, what being a good partner is and about you as well. And I think that's a positive.
Okay, let's do it.
She's like, let's ready. Get it done. I got it
ready to go.
Chop, chop.
Chelsea's BS meter is very good. All right, so we asked Mark a series of questions, Chelsea, and we want to know if he got these right. These are questions about you and things that, you know, he possibly should know. Let's start with this. What is your favorite color?
My favorite color is yellow and blue.
All right, now let me just tell you, this is good because his initial answer was white, and we mocked him, and he said yellow. He said yellow, so he's been paying some attention. I got to give him a correct on this.
Is that a half a point, though?
I'm going to give him a full point.
Wow, generous of you,
Steve. Yeah, I just want to get him off to the right, you know, on the right foot.
She loves the white hydrangea flower, Steve. I pay very close attention to the flowers.
I didn't ask you about the flower, man. Be happy you got yellow.
Okay, that would have been a good question, though.
Thank you.
Beautiful Chelsea, what is your middle name?
Blair.
Mark said Blair. That's absolutely correct. Another full point.
She's in my phone as Chelsea Blair Gideon. I have the full name in there, Steve.
But you would have known it otherwise.
Yes, right. Okay. Right.
I don't know if I could proceed if he didn't get my middle name.
I think that's fair. It's completely fair.
Smart lady.
It's completely fair. How old were you when you two met?
How old was I when we met? I was 31.
His answer was 31. What a run he's on.
That's three for three for those counting at home, Steve.
Now, we know how much Mark loves sports. That's been his career choice, his path, even though he's turned out to be a really good talk show host as well. What is your favorite sport?
Baseball.
Mark said baseball. That's four in a row.
He's kicking it. This is awesome.
It's unbelievable. Wow. Question number five. What is your least favorite sport?
Soccer?
Ugh, what a disappointing moment.
Mark said basketball. Do you not like basketball, or are you okay with basketball?
No, I like basketball. I was the Dennis Rodman when I was playing in middle school.
Well, there we go. We've hit our first play. There's just one. Okay. It's just one.
Mark, how did you say basketball?
Did we go to one Bulls game last year? How many times did I ask you? No priority on basketball. I've never heard you dog soccer.
Let me repeat your fiance's question. Mark, how could you say basketball?
Yes, I'm really, really sorry. My bad.
Is that better? You know, Chelsea, you know what that is? That's growth. Mm-hmm. That's growth. Question number six. Now, you got four out of five. Mark, don't be down. Question number six. Where were you born? As in the town.
Where was I born? I was born in Park Ridge.
Park Ridge. All right. Now, I will say this. Park Ridge is not a bad drive to Northbrook, which was Mark's answer. So I will not give you any credit, but I will say geographically, you could almost see it from there. All right. So Park Ridge. Okay. Now, this is important, Chelsea. You know, every couple has, stated or unstated, the list. If this celebrity walked into your life and said, I've got to run away with you right now, you'd go, well, I get it. I understand.
Yeah, hall pass.
The hall pass for you would be who? What dude? What celebrity dude?
Would I run away with?
Yeah.
Celebrity
crush, if you want to make it that.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio is a terrific, and another guy I'm confused with all the time.
Didn't know that was
Leonardo. No, it's Steve. Leonardo DiCaprio. No, and you know the other guy I'm most often confused with? Denzel Washington,
right.
Which would be the choice.
He's my favorite actor.
Oh, so would you like to change your answer?
I'm not sure I want to change my answer.
Okay.
That's right. Stick to your guns.
All right. Good for you. Good for you. Let me just put it a different way. If you're stuck in an elevator that is no longer working and it's Denzel and Leonardo in there with you, and you had to choose to have one of them save you, who would it be?
I don't know. It would be tough.
It would be tough. Tough. On top of the fact that why would that elevator not be working?
Because we hit the button to make it stop.
There is that.
It's getting a little uncomfortable in here, Steve. Next question.
Number 8. You know, you're on a great run. You had 4 straight.
Give him a half for that, I think.
Ooh, thanks,
because
Mary.
Of the startling resemblance of Leonardo and Denzel?
Because it's your favorite movie star, so maybe she, you know, the question's very similar.
All right, 4.5. 4.5.
Okay.
What is your least favorite household chore? We all have to do them. Some work harder than others. What's your least favorite household chore?
Cleaning.
Ding, 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 Johnny. That's exactly right. All right. Now, let's do this. We'll take a very quick break. We're going to come back in just a second. You know what? I got to finish this right now. I just can't stop. There's too much momentum.
Too exciting.
All right. So you're and as soon as you get the majority of these right, we're going to declare you a grown human being. Mm-hmm. What is the one chore that Mark never does that drives you crazy? And it could be a chore you don't like. You know what I'm saying? It's just something you'd like him to do, and he just doesn't do it.
What's on the honey-do list that he just never gets around to actually completing?
Being organized.
That's not a chore.
It is because she has to, you know, tolerate you doing it.
Right,
he said fix things or change a light bulb.
Yeah, that's another one.
Okay, no points. What is your favorite holiday, Chelsea?
My favorite holiday is Hanukkah.
Hanukkah. You would think that you would have stayed in faith.
Or Thanksgiving.
Oh, well, okay. All right, Thanksgiving. I didn't tell you the answer. I'm going to give you a full point. That's 5.5. He said Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Aw.
Is there a song that's your song? What song would be your song as a couple?
Hungry Eyes.
Wow.
Bang!
I am hot. I am on this. I am so impressed with me.
I don't want to get you too excited. You need 1.5 points to have the majority of these correct. You're looking for an 8-point total. What's your favorite junk food, Chelsea?
Pizza.
Ooh, I should have had it. That's a bad job. That was a bad job.
Bad job by Mark. He said ice cream. What's your favorite TV show?
Handmaid's Tale and Big Little Lies and Dateline.
Big Little Lies. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And Big Little Lies is good. We're at 7.5. You're only a half point away. You have 4 opportunities to get a half point. What TV show do you absolutely hate that Mark loves?
Great Hungry Eyes by Joe Romano right there.
It's a show that Mark always watches, drives you crazy. Could be a movie. Yeah. Could be a TV show.
Movie?
Either one.
Yeah.
Annie Hall.
I don't watch Annie Hall
that
much.
It's funny. We didn't get Annie Hall. He said all the President's Men.
You want to put it on, Mark. What is that?
All the President's Men.
What we're learning about Mark.
3 chances to get a half point. What's the one thing you would change about Mark? If you could just, you know, magic wand, change one thing, what would it be? I'll give you a hint. You mentioned it earlier.
Stick to the basics.
To be more organized.
That's it.
Hey.
That's it. He doesn't put anything on the calendar. Mark, congratulations.
Thank you so much,
You've
Steve.
Grown as a person. 8.5 points out of a total of 15 means you have grown as an individual. By the way, Chels, here's the last couple. Have you ever had a fight over something on the radio? He said, yes, you have. And if Chelsea had a superpower, what would she want it to be? His original answer was worry less. Super Joe Romano pointed out, worry less man is not a great superhero. She said you would like to be able to read people's minds.
Oh, God.
Starting with your fiancé.
Oh, man, I don't know if I'd want to, but okay.
Chelsea, fabulous job by you. Mark, adequate job by you. I declare you happy and healthy until we play this game next time.
Steve declares you husband and wife.
Well, we're getting there. Thank you, Chelsea, for doing this. I know this is not fun for you, but thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, call your fiance and tell you I love her. Apologies to Eric Edelstein. We are up against it here, but he'll be back next week with a full-blown Eric Edelstein appearance.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
All right, a couple of show business. Sir. By the way, Dean is tied up right now. We're hoping to find someone who can untie him. But we don't expect to have access to Dean today for moron entertainment. So the least moronic person on the show would be G. Suki. And Carm, if you would just enjoy this now as we sit back and G just gives us a couple of show business headlines.
Oh, sweet.
Just had to name that thwack. If you want to win tickets to the BMW next week, and these are great tickets, a hospitality package, 312-981-7200 when we play America's Hottest Game Show. Name that thwack. THWACK coming up soon.
I heard that's sweep of the nation, Steve.
It is sweeping the nation.
Right.
Have you texted with Chelsea since the contest?
Yes, we've having some texts going on here. It's like, we're on a group text. People listening, heard it, loved it.
I thought she did really well.
What about me, Steve? It's about me.
Your adoration for Annie Hall, I didn't see coming.
I'm still cracking up.
Why is that? Is that feel off? Annie Hall's a fine film.
The two movie-themed questions that have come up the two times we've done this, you thought Murder on the Orient Express was her favorite movie, and she thought Annie Hall was yours. That's the only time in this whole thing where I've thought you two have never met.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do enjoy Woody Allen films, despite his sideways turn in life. Earlier, better than later. Match Point was a fine film.
It actually is. Yeah. A fine film, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, G, so show business headlines, anything particular out there?
Well, right now, what I'm seeing is Chris Rock is accused of racism after making a joke about the gunmen and the mass shootings. Basically, he posted on Instagram a meme with the words, "The first thing people say when a mass shooting is announced," and it was a photo of Golden Girl Betty White.
And I didn't get it, and you pointed out he's saying, Bet he white.
So, that's going on. Rock's post received over 106,000 likes on social media's Instagram platform before, people were saying, accusing him of reverse racism.
I think we're not really going to Chris Rock for political commentary, so, roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
Betty White probably thought it was funny.
I'm not racist, you're a racist.
Yeah, that's productive, isn't it?
We love that one.
Yeah. You know what they say about Chris Rock? He's the least racist black comedian that posted that meme. Yeah.
And the other thing, are you a big Beyonce fan?
Oh, sure, I love Beyonce.
Are you a member of the Beehive?
Yeah, of course I am.
Beyonce?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
She is now sparking rumors that fans are thinking that she is pregnant with baby number 4.
Well, now, why do we think that? She got a little bump?
Well, she's just been dropping clues.
Well.
She's been very active on her Instagram lately. 37-year-old singer has been sharing a series of glamorous purple-themed posts on
All right,
this week, as she was holidaying in the Hamptons, and apparently the way she was covering her stomach with her arms and holding a purple Croc bag has gotten the Beehive all into a...
Uh-huh. Coincidence, I do the same thing.
Everybody thinks it was a deliberate statement.
You know that the Beehive is some of the most passionate fans in the world. Like,
oh, yeah.
More the Bears fans, Blackhawks fans.
No, you don't cross Beyonce.
The Beehive is massive.
They remind me of Steve's fans.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
There you go.
What's the nickname for your fans?
The Steve Hive.
Steve.
We're working on it. What do you want me? You got one more? I like the rule of three.
You like the rule of three? Okay, so people is talking about a YouTube star accidentally, because there's all of these influencers and YouTube celebrities.
Sure, of course.
She uploaded a video of herself hitting, spitting on, and yelling at her dog.
She spit on her dog?
Yelled at the dog and hit the dog. YouTube star Brooke, I think it's Heltz.
What is she a star for?
I don't know.
She bakes cakes.
Yeah, she's like
is that
a lifestyle. No, lifestyle.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And do we know why she hit and spit on the dog?
Is there ever a reason to spit on your dog? Never, ever.
Or hit your dog?
Yeah, but everyone's very concerned because she accidentally shared this on her YouTube channel on Tuesday. How do you accidentally share something like that? And who took the video? Well, she accidentally took it, and then, because, you know, all these Insta celebrities, like, produce their own videos in their homes, and then they upload them.
Oh, she just had her camera on.
Yeah, and she accidentally did it. It sparked an investigation by the Los Angeles Police Department. And then she's trying to tell people, her followers, that she's just trying to prank her pooch, which is a Doberman named Sphinx.
That would be funny when the Doberman pranks her and bites her leg off.
Yeah.
It's interesting because there was a reaction earlier yesterday that she said she's just having a bad week. Story's changed
That's a little, hasn't it?
Has anybody gotten on the TikTok app?
No. What is a TikTok?
So TikTok is starting to make a dent here. I don't know if you want to call it like a combination of Instagram and Vine. And I'm just thinking of it right now because there was a video of a woman in her bathtub. You only see her legs. And her dog is wanting to jump into the bathtub. And she's kind of teasing the animal. And, of course, you know, that feels perhaps teasing to men as well. Anyway, is this an attractive woman?
We don't know.
You never really see her. But my point, I don't really have a point, actually. But TikTok is something that's going to be a thing here, Steve, apparently.
I mean, she has over 334,000 subscribers.
To what? What does she do?
She's just a lifestyle beauty. You know, here's the thing, Steve. What do any of these YouTube stars do? But the crazy thing is you'd be shocked, especially young people, tweens especially, that's all they do. They just watch YouTube. They don't watch TV.
Well, I'm looking at pictures of her now. She's quite attractive and apparently a horrible human being. You know, spitting on you, hitting, spitting on your dog because you had a bad week. It's ridiculous. She often features her Doberman in videos. I'm trying to find as fast as I can any reason why I'd be interested in her. One of Hout's most viewed videos involve her kissing her apparent ex-boyfriend. Okay, I don't have enough time in my life to be looking at those.
I'm telling you, a lot of young kids, that's all they do. They follow people on YouTube.
Like, look at Aunt Becky's daughter. And her name?
Oh, yes.
She's a big one on YouTube.
And they don't do anything. It's just their lifestyle.
That's her career.
Well, that's the thing. I've looked at three stories as fast as I possibly could. There, not one says what she does.
And then having that many followers legitimizes you, and then that's their career. Because then they sell to advertisers. Yeah. And then
don't go to school.
Your 12-year-old, 10-year-old is worshipping them. That's why you've got to be careful about what they're watching on YouTube.
I'm being told Dean is available.
Oh, thank God.
Oh, wait, Dean's here?
Sorry, guys.
Dean, the good news is we've already talked shows.
Great job, G.
No, it's a very sad report.
All right, so let's do Dean right after we do a quick version of this game. This is Name That Thwack, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to Dean. And the good news is we don't have to talk about entertainment because we just covered it.
Did you say flack?
Name That Thwack, T-H-W-A-C-K, the sound it makes when you hit a golf ball. A pair of tickets to the Oasis at the BMW Championship, August 15th through the 18th. A one-of-a-kind hospitality venue providing reserved seating with exceptional views of the 11th, surrounded by six holes. Golf fans are at the epicenter of the action. It's BMWChampionship.com for the 2019 BMW second leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Underway now with the Northern Trust Open. And let's begin and end with Mike and Elmhurst. Mike, here's your shot, buddy. I'm going to give you a chance. You got to name that thwack. You got to get, based on yesterday, you got to get one right. You got four chances to get one right. Our chosen golfers today are Bubba. Do you know Bubba?
Yes. I love Bubba.
Yeah, Bubba's a lefty. Rory and DJ. All right, so we're going to play a thwack. You tell us which one it is. Here we go.
Ooh, it's got to be Bubba.
Bubba Watson's is left-handed. That didn't sound left-handed to me.
Really?
No, it really didn't.
Ambidextrous.
Yeah, Bubba, Rory, or DJ? By the way, your fourth choice is any other golfer in the world. You're going Rory?
Yeah, I'm going Rory.
All right, let's go to the judge. Oh, so close.
Wow.
Three more chances to get one right. Are you ready? Name that thwack.
Ooh.
That was a light hitter. It doesn't sound like it'd be DJ. That feels more Rory to me. That felt like a finesse shot. Maybe, 140-yard wedge, that kind of feel.
I think you're spot on. I'm going Rory.
Ding, ding, ding.
No! What? There you go. Name that thwack. I can tell, Mike, you're a golfer. Where do you play?
I play all over whenever I can.
Well, congratulations. You on the way to work?
Yes.
And what is work for you?
I work for a software startup.
Well, name them. Let's go.
Probably shouldn't on the air, but we're very excited to kind of get our funding and get going.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, is it going to be the next
early.
Google? Can you tell us so
I
we
hope,
can invest?
That would be incredible.
Yeah, so you'll tell us and we'll invest and we'll make a lot of money.
Exactly.
I got a pair of tickets for you for the Oasis at the BMW Championship. Have fun, man.
Oh, so thrilled. Thank you so much.
Thanks. BMWChampionship.com. We're going to play more of this tomorrow, maybe next week leading up to this. What's the story, Super Joe?
Yeah, we can play. That was our last pair of tickets to this particular event, but we can play Name That Thwack all week long.
Well,
in case we don't have time, because we're at Channel 9 tomorrow, play another thwack for me when you're ready.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
That's my favorite.
That's Bubba for sure.
That was not Bubba.
I know.
Bubba Watson?
That was Steve.
That wasn't me either. That was
Carl Spackler. Was that Carl
Spackler?
Yes!
Congratulations.
Steve,
you've won nothing.
I know.
All right, it's 8:21. Now, apparently, in our continuing ebb and flow of the show, we won't have Dean after the break now. Okay, Dean is no longer available.
So it is good I did my entertainment report.
It absolutely is. We'll come back and figure something else out that'll be highly interesting and entertaining in a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Had Dean actually been on today, he would have been sponsored, as always, by our friends at Ravinia. Blues guitar sold separately. Midway Airport's been ranked the worst airport in the country.
That just seems wrong.
So I totally agree.
I'm surprised. I've always had a very smooth time at Midway.
Midway, in the old days, was a disaster prior to the redo of the airport. I remember one winter snowstorm trying to get to Houston where I sat at Midway in a wooden elementary school chair in a hallway for about 8 hours.
In my rough and tumble childhood, we used to fly out of Midway to camp.
Mm-hmm.
And
Midway was a dump until they redid it. Now it's a fine. I don't have any complaints about Midway.
Yeah, Midway usually runs smoothly. It's O'Hare I have problems with.
Right. I mean, if you polled Chicagoans, would you rather go to Midway or O'Hare? Wouldn't Midway win?
Absolutely. Easier to get to, easier to park, easier to get out of.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago's Midway Airport ranked as the worst among 50 of the busiest airports in the country. One reason Midway ranks so low is because it's bare bones when it comes to amenities, according to a travel news site called The Points Guy. The Points Guy is a guy who's developed a career, and a very lucrative career, of telling you how to maximize getting points from airlines and all sorts of different airlines tips. He's a guy we probably should have on again. He hasn't been on in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he carries around like every airline point-gathering card possible. He must have a credit rating of about 9 with all the credit cards he has. Currently Midway has one lounge. It's a USO center for military and their families. Plus, there's construction ongoing, long gray hallways, crowded gates, flight delays, all contributing to Midway's bad rating. It ranked decently for commute, 33rd out of 50, because of the CTA's Orange Line. See, this is another thing. this is a rating site that is, I think, determining this simply on Chicago residents.
Yeah, it depends on where you live.
Yeah, in the burbs, it's a piece of cake to get to Midway.
Well, it's not for me.
Well, not for you.
Yeah, and in my house, if somebody says, you're flying out, are you going to Midway or O'Hare? My husband will say,
20 minutes from
Midway, I'm not driving you.
I mean, it's
that's
easier.
What he says.
It's easier for me to get to O'Hare.
Yes.
And the Orange Line is super slow, but I have a better time when I'm at Midway. Usually the flight's not delayed. And
I understand
simple.
The amenities bitch about this, because there's plenty of food. There's a couple of shops here and there.
Yeah, now, I don't know, now it's about everybody wants their airport to be like a resort. They want like high-end shopping, mid-range shopping.
That's the thing, I want to spend the least amount of time
right.
at an airport. I'm not going to an airport for the socializing. I'm going to an airport to get on a plane, go somewhere, and come back.
If your flight gets delayed at Midway, there's a bar very close to you that you can sit down at and have a cheeseburger, or you want to get a beer or whatever else, go ahead. Where are you coming from that O'Hare is easier for you, G?
Well, I live in Uptown. But
so how's that easier?
It's always
easier. Because you can jump on a canopy.
Yeah, and it's also easier. I mean, but it's also easier in the sense that usually when I lived in Westtown, too, before, it was Blue Line. Blue Line's better than the Orange Line, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think it'd be easier from where you are to drive, too.
Yeah.
I see G as a public transportation expert on the situation.
I do. I ride the CTA.
See, I live, I live in a double-wide in East St. Louis, but when I'm at the summer house in the western burbs, I'm smack dab in the middle of 88 or the Stevenson. So it's either or. But I got to say, I've had less problems getting out of Midway than I have O'Hare in the last few years.
The security is easier to get through at Midway, for me, I've found. But, I don't, you know.
Are you TSA? You got to get TSA. You know the problem with the TSA pre-check now? Everybody has it.
Yes.
I just got it.
It doesn't really help you.
No. Too many people have it now. The riffraff, like you, should not be allowed to have it.
Because I always get randomly picked to go through. So I don't even buy it.
Yeah, she's delightful.
It's
Vandeveld's delightful. They go, we like her bright, cheery attitude.
Yeah. So they let me through. Or they don't want to deal with me if they, you know, have to wait in line.
I mean, the only way to travel well is to travel first class, right? The way you do, Steve.
Well, occasionally. $323 million modernization project going on at Midway for the last two or three years, including an expanded security checkpoint, a new parking garage, a pedway. Honestly, the pedway piece of this, the moving sidewalk piece of this, aren't we fat enough? Couldn't we walk a little more?
Agreed.
The more local concessions, too, similar to O'Hare. I think you're right, Carms, and Jay as well. I think too many people want to go to the spa. They want to go to the airport, have it feel like a mall in the heyday of a mall.
That's exactly it.
No. No.
You don't want that.
Show up stressed out at the last minute, run to your flight, get on, try not to sweat on the person next to you, never sit in the middle seat, fly to where you're going, come back, pray to God your bags are there so you can get in your car and go home.
And go barefoot and clip your toenails on the way.
That's not go crazy.
Oh.
The one
actually, if you see that, there ought to be a way you could throw that person off the plane.
Open the door and just throw them out.
Yeah.
I don't want to be too hard on the former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, but he clearly made a terrible decision when he got rid of the potbellies at Midway. That was definitely a money grab.
What happened?
Yeah, the Potbellies was a staple. You walked in, you got your breakfast sandwich there, you were good. And Rahm caved into whatever money thing was going on here. Now Home Run in Pizza's there. It's more money, not as good. That's been a major downgrade for Midway.
What's it like?
Major downgrade.
Everybody write, Mark.
What's it like when Chelsea has to travel with you and she has to hear you go, old man? You know, they used to have a Potbellies here.
Traveling with Chelsea, as you stop at the first place, I need to get a bottle of water. And then you stop at the next place, I'm going to get another bottle of water. I'm like, you know, they give water on the plate. You know, you're going to get a nice, there's ample water.
Listen, I hated traveling before. I traveled with my very wonderful friends, Bob and Noreen, who travel first class. And if you're traveling with someone who's traveling first class, then you get to, like, scooch in on whatever they're doing. Did you know that?
Listen,
I didn't know that.
Well, you can, certainly. Yeah. I'm only slightly exaggerating when I say this because I'm old. I'm 58. The current first class is only slightly better than the coach of the 70s, say 80s, maybe even
really?
Early 90s.
That's what they were telling me.
Yeah. Sponsored by Ravinia. That was Dean, who wasn't on. Jeremy Piven's in the house in the PPG Paints green room. He'll be on with us next hour. And looking forward to talking to him. He's got stand-up on Friday night at the Vic, and you ought to go see him. Headlines first, that's next, 720 WGN.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday, what a day. Rockin' all week with you. This day is on.
It is 8:40, the Steve Cochran Show. One of my favorite people in show business is Henry Winkler. And I'm not just saying this because he's on hold listening right now. I'd say it even if he wasn't in the room or wasn't on hold listening right now. He's a fabulous guy. Now, he's a great guest and a handsome devil. He's a great actor. And if you've not seen Barry, this show, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm just telling you, Barry is a must. You've been watching Barry? Did you binge it?
I love Barry.
Winkler plays a former slash current actor who's an acting coach. He's got some troubles.
Yes.
but one of his students just happens to be a serial killer.
Mm-hmm. Hitman slash
serial killer. Bill Hader is great, by the way, as well. Anyway, I love Henry Winkler. And I loved him in, the old guy show, the Better Late Than Never. Mm-hmm. He's great in that. You know, we don't have any time for the interview because I've been sucking up to you so much, I don't even have time to ask you a question.
Can know what? During the interview, I had enough time to run back upstairs and put on a tie and jacket.
That was just during the introduction.
What an introduction.
I haven't seen you in person probably in 10 years, and you're just more handsome than ever, aren't you?
Well, you know, it's true. I age like a fine wine, but I think I'm at that balance point. I could go either way right now.
Let's go in reverse order. When they get you the pitch and the script for Barry,
yes.
You go, let me see if I can wrap my head around this.
Yes.
It's a lovable hitman, and I'm his mentor of sorts. How did you get the show? And I don't mean get it as in offered it. How did you get the script?
Okay, so I am driving down Ventura Boulevard in the valley here in Los Angeles. I've just left my business managers. We were doing estate planning. Really, lovely event. All of a sudden, I get a call, and they say, there's a new show, Barry. Bill Hader is one of the producer, writers, and stars, and they want to see you. You're on a short list. I said, wait a minute. I love Bill Hader. It's HBO. Oh, I've never been on HBO.
Right.
I said, okay, so I'm on a short list. Is Dustin Hoffman on that list? They said, no, because I said, if he is, I'm not going in because he's going to get it. They sent me the script. My son, Max, who is just finished his third movie, directing his third movie.
Very cool.
Directed me in the audition. I went in. I made Bill Hader laugh.
Nice.
I left, and then you don't hear. And it's that process of you're still on the list. They're thinking.
It's so stupid. This is Henry Frickin' Winkler. By the way, that's his middle name. That's his middle name, Frickin'.
Frickin', yeah. I had it changed just a few years ago legally.
So you're waiting, and now you probably realize this is something I'd love to do.
Oh, well, you know right away it's written really well. You read a lot of scripts over the years. I've celebrated. I started my first professional job June 30th, 1970, with the Yale Drama Summer Theater.
How about that?
Made $173 a week. I was in heaven.
That $173 in today's money is $1 million. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I was rolling in it.
Yeah.
And I had just graduated from the Yale School of Drama, and the present was my parents gave me a Pontiac Le Mans.
Oh, you are living, you chick magnet, you.
Oh, my gosh, I want to tell you, the only thing was it had kidney problems. It had a bad gear pan or whatever that's called.
Right, close enough. Look.
So I would stop. I would stop every 10 miles from New York City out to where the summer theater was.
Because you had to. Not because you wanted to, because you had to.
I had to. Now, it has nothing to do with the car when I stop every 10 miles from New York to wherever the theater is.
Yeah, you got to pee.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, now here's the thing. I mean this when I say this. I get how ridiculous show business is. You know, I'm in some form of it as well.
Of course you are.
And I've done.
And how long have you been on the air?
Radio coming up on 40 years, but in a couple
isn't
of years.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah, it's a nice run. but I've been fired 51 times, so, you know, it's been a short burst. So, but here's the thing. I meant what I said. If I'm a producer, look, Hollywood's nothing but meetings. I had development deals like you wouldn't believe in the 90s.
Whoa.
You go and you sit in an office and everybody loves you and you can't. Look, I was never Henry Winkler's driver. Here's a guy that everybody loves. And if he comes in and auditions, I got to go, well, of course he's right for the role. I don't wait 3 weeks to see other chumps.
Yeah,
that's
three
ridiculous.
Weeks is already short. But here it is. To all of the people who are listening who are thinking of being an actor.
Yeah, don't.
You know, I would never say that.
No, of course not.
But if this really is burning a hole in your soul and you must do it, you have to know that you're like a Weeble Wobble. You're like one of those toys that you punch and it goes down and it comes right back up again. Right? That's who we are. So that no matter what happens, your strength comes from you.
Sure.
You get up and you keep moving forward. That's how you get to be on the radio for 40 years.
Yeah, and when you look back over the course of Henry Winkler, your career, it's amazing the stuff you've done and who you've worked with. And it probably seems like it's been about 10 minutes, right?
It's exactly right. I was just thinking about how lucky I am. Last year, I won the Emmy for this show.
For Barry.
And I looked out and I thought, oh my God, I know so many of these people now. I've worked with so many of these people, and there are still so many I want to work with, like Sam Rockwell.
Oh, he's great. Mm. Well, he's here now. Let's bring him out. Sam Rockwell, everybody.
Have you seen Fosse and Vernon Fosse?
I haven't, but I hear it's fantastic.
It will knock your socks off. The Michelle Williams and Sam Rockwell are amazing. Patricia Arquette in Escape from Dinamore.
Oh, incredible. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. I wrote her a fan letter.
Wow.
Oh, that's very cool. How great would that be to open up a fan letter from Henry Winkler? That's tremendous.
All I thought was, you know, you got to let this person know that this is off the chart.
Well, see, that's one of the reasons that people love you is because you're a decent, authentic human being.
Down to earth.
Yeah. That's going to end when I come to Chicago for the Comic-Con.
All right, let's get the plug in. When is it?
It is in August, and I will be there on the 22nd, 23rd, 24th.
22nd, 23rd, 24th. Signing, I assume?
I am signing. My children's books will be there. Waterboy t-shirts will be there.
By the way, children's books are the Hank Zipser books, which you got to get.
And if you are a lovely enough family, I will sign myself and go home with you.
Listen,
you can put me in a glass case.
You know what I didn't realize you did? It can continue to fawn over you. I didn't know you worked with Katharine Hepburn.
I did. And this was at the very end of her career.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
We were in North Carolina. And we did a Truman Capote movie, One Christmas. And when she opened her mouth and did her first line, and there was that iconic voice Katharine Hepburn, my mind went blank.
Not a chance I've got my line.
I didn't remember my line. I didn't remember where I was. I just kept saying, that's her.
That's very cool.
My Lord. But, you know, I have the most wonderful time, first of all, in Chicago. I was just there on a book tour because our newest book is coming out October 1st, completely different than the 30 other books we've written.
30?
Yeah, it's called Alien Superstar. A 13-year-old has to leave his planet and lands on Universal back lot.
Well, that is an absolutely different planet.
And who is going to question a rocket ship on the back lot of Universal?
Right.
And I don't know how this happened, but that alien gets a job on a sitcom as an alien and becomes a superstar.
I love it. When is it out?
October 1st.
Excellent. All right, yeah. Comic-Con coming up. I would also recommend a book that I've never heard you talk about, and I don't think we promoted it together, but called I've Never Met an Idiot on the River.
Oh, my favorite thing to do outside of my family and acting.
Fly fishing.
Fly fishing for trout. As a matter of fact, I just caught the fish of my lifetime in Wyoming. In Centennial, Wyoming, we were there 3 weeks ago, and I caught a 12-pound rainbow.
Well, that rainbow has to pee in a cup. We're going to need to do some testing.
I put it back. I signed a laminated picture of the fawns, put it in its mouth, and I'm hanging in nests all over Western rivers.
You know what? That's what makes me laugh, too, when I think about it.
You never know when they're getting cable.
Absolutely. Can you imagine you're fly fishing in Wyoming, you're in a river, and, you know, there's reflections bouncing off the water. You look over and go, okay, we got to get out of the sun. I think I just saw Fonzie fly fishing.
It is so true. And I tried wearing the jacket, but it wasn't waterproof.
No. Leather and a raging river, bad combination.
Well, you know, I wore the jacket. They ripped out the lining of one of the leather jackets they had for me when I did all the water skiing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the only thing I didn't do was jump the shark.
Yeah, which, of course, is associated with you forever.
That's true.
All right. The lovely G. Suki is here. G, if you had a chance, now I can't say we can deliver this, but if you had a chance to ask Henry Winkler a question, what would it be?
I need to know.
Yes.
I'm very concerned about Gene right now, Henry. I need to know what's going to happen. Is he going to, I don't want him headed to the slammer. He's so charming and clueless and self-absorbed and wonderful.
Thank you. First of all, thank you. That Gene Cousineau, the actor to the stars, yeah, the teacher, he is just realized at the end of the second season that his relationship with who he thought was his, you know, kind of like son,
mm-hmm.
Barry the student, is going to change radically forever.
Yep.
And I went to the writers and I said, well, you've put me in this pickle. What exactly were you thinking? And they said, we don't know. We don't have the slightest idea about what is going to happen in the third season.
Well, that's what makes it great.
We start shooting in March.
That's what makes it great. And by the way, one other hook on Barry. There is a... I don't know, was a gang leader, a sect leader, if you will, who is completely white. He's whiter than Conan O'Brien.
Yes, and he's bald, right?
And he's bald. And
yes.
He's one of the funniest guys, one of the funniest characters you're ever going to see on TV.
Yeah, NoHo Hank,
yeah.
Played by Anthony Corrigan.
Who's great.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah.
It's Henry Winkler coming for Comic-Con, and it's sometime in August, and we suggest...
Could we repeat? It starts on the 22nd and ends on the 25th.
22nd to the 25th, we'll be in town. He's offering to sign himself and go to the Dells with you. Mark,
yes.
Carmen, say hi to Henry Winkler.
Henry, great to have you on here. I just want to know, like, life moments. Did you know when you got cast... as the Fonz, that this thing was going to take off, that Happy Days was going to be a winner? I mean, I'm just curious, like, your mindset at the time.
I had 7 lines. I was not a regular. I was a semi-regular, which meant that I worked one day a week for the first 12, which meant, you know, my work ethic was I couldn't go to the beach on a day that you were supposed to be working.
Sure.
So I went to the studio for one day, and I would sit in my apartment... for the rest, I don't know. I clean that apartment like brilliantly, but you never know.
Do you still have the jackets?
I have one. Gary Marshall, rest his soul, had one. One was ruined when I water skied in it. One I delivered to the Smithsonian,
right,
in Washington, and I don't know where the 5th one is.
We're way late here. I could talk to you forever. You know that. But better late than never. Any chance of another season?
You know what? We're working on it. It will come maybe in a completely different kind of way. But we are absolutely at this moment working on it because we had 2. Can you believe that was a job?
No, it's crazy. No,
they sent me all over Asia with Terry. I just saw Terry do his one-man show in Las Vegas.
I assume that was a good experience?
It was a really good experience, except he sweat so much, if you sat in the first 2 rows, you literally, it was like a waterfall.
I've been told it's like a Gallagher concert where they hand out plastic sheeting, you know, when the watermelon gets busted and
you
everybody
know,
has to
do it. Next time I go, I'm bringing my own raincoat, but he is, you know, Terry, I mean, you see him, he is who he is, he's big in his personality. He's big as a man.
Yeah.
He's got great stories, and he sings. He put out albums.
It also includes George Foreman and William Shatner and a great young comedian host. Anyway, I love the show. Look, I love you. You know that, and I appreciate you coming on and doing this. I hope we see you when you're in town.
You know what? I look forward to that, and what a lovely conversation we just had.
Thank you, buddy. Henry Winkler. That's Henry Winkler, by the way, one of the greats of all time, waiting for a phone call. Give him the frickin' job. Why do I have to fix everything? I never finished up that airport survey thing. Number one in the country, San Diego. And, you know, it kind of makes sense because you fly into the airport. It's downtown. I mean, you fly into San Diego, it looks like you're going to, you know, land on top of a building. But it's as close as it gets. Phoenix, Portland, Atlanta, Sacramento, Seattle, San Francisco, Norman Mineta, San Jose International Airport. Not familiar. Number 8, Indianapolis, 9, John Wayne Airport. Is that Orange County Airport? I think it is. Yeah. It's number 10. So, again, O'Hare, 30, Midway, dead last, 50. And top five amenities in the country, John F. Kennedy. Kennedy Airport in New York. Mm. They just redid a bunch of it. I don't buy it. I haven't been to Kennedy in a while. What, amenities? You don't get mugged now? Is that the deal?
You just don't want to be a LaGuardia, so it's better to be a Kennedy.
Or maybe that's where they're doing all the work.
LaGuardia's right by the U.S. Open. I'm going soon. It's going to be awesome.
Newark came in fourth, by the way.
Oof.
We'll take a break, come back in just a second, get you the news, and hi to everybody on CLTV. Tomorrow we're at Channel 9. Details on that next hour, too, on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
I see you. World's filled with amazing people. Impressive people. People that just kind of blow you away, and we're lucky to be able to help tell those stories here. You're about to meet Jenna Jihad, 13 years old, maybe the youngest journalist in the world. You're not just the youngest Palestinian journalist. Started her career as a reporter literally a number of years ago. When you're 13, the number would be 13 years.
I think around when she was 7 years
old.
Yeah,
exactly. She wanted to present the perspective of Palestinian youth growing up amidst Israeli occupation and violence, originally using her mother's iPhone to capture videos of protests near her home, puts them on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and started covering events and marches in Jerusalem and Jordan, reporting in both Arabic and English. She is in town to do a couple of speeches. She will be at the Al-Nada Community Center in Worth tonight at 7 o'clock, and then tomorrow night at Grace Episcopal Church on South Dearborn in Chicago, also at 7 o'clock. An Arabic language event tonight, an English language event tomorrow. This amazing young lady joins us on the phone now. Good morning. Can I call you Jenna?
Good morning. Yeah, of course.
Well, thank you for coming on, and we're very impressed with you, I must say.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right, so let's start with the obvious here. What drove you to do this at such a young age?
So I started when I was 7 years old, when I realized that there were not enough journalists to cover things that happened in Nabi Saleh, like in, also in Palestine in general. Like when a lot of people were getting killed in front of me, a lot of people were getting injured in front of me by the Israeli occupation, military soldiers, and like those feelings that we used to feel as Palestinian children living under this occupation. I wanted to be the voice of those feelings and the voice of those children and just send our message to the whole world.
Jana, what are some of the advantages that a kid reporter has over maybe an adult reporter?
So, of course, as a child trying to send my message, I think the world will listen to me a bit better because I am part of those children and part of those kids that are living under occupation, and I'm speaking about my personal experiences representing other children. So I think that's good.
Is there an Israeli equivalent kid to you? Is there some teenage kid who's reporting from the Israeli side? And if so, have you met them?
I don't know.
There's no one you're aware of?
I'm not aware of any.
The danger that you are under is significant. How do you stay safe, or how do you stay comfortable, I guess?
Living in Palestine as a Palestinian child, I'm never safe because Israeli occupation soldiers can raid my house anytime. My parents cannot protect me because my house can get demolished anytime. I can get arrested anytime. I can get killed anytime because of not doing anything, because of me playing, because of me trying to defend my land. And there's no place to be safe. That's why we are working to ensure that every single child around the world lives in safety and just feels safe in their own home, at least.
Jana, was there anyone that you were inspired by? I mean, there are a lot of kids that just, I know that's a very different type of life that you're living there in the West Bank. But was there anyone in your family that you were inspired by?
Of course, one of my amazing inspirations there is my mom, because she was born into an activist family too. When she was born, her dad was in jail. She went through a lot of difficult stuff. She raised me as a single mom, and she's just so amazing. She's right now working, and she's just so, she has this amazing personality and this personality of fighting for her rights, and just, she's amazing. And also, I have a lot of other role models from my family, like my Uncle Bilal, who is a journalist, and I used to see him getting his camera broken or just getting arrested or getting shot at just because of him trying to cover whatever was happening.
You know, you're a very mature young lady, and it's not up to you to solve this, but you live this every day. There's talk of a one-state solution, which doesn't seem terribly realistic. How do you feel about a two-state solution, which seems to be brought up most often?
So, personally, I don't believe in the two-state solution, because the two-state solution is 100% dead. Where are the Israeli borders? 68% of the West Bank are illegal Israeli Jewish-only settlements built on Palestinian land in the West Bank. And also, even the Israeli Authority, they don't want the two-state solution, so I don't know how is that going to work. I believe in a one-state solution where everyone can live together, because this struggle is not a religious struggle, but is a political struggle. Palestine is a homeland for all religions. I don't mind living with anybody that can just remove this Zionist mindset out of their head, and just under one government, one, like, all of us get the same rights, and the refugees can come back to their land, and yeah, that's what I believe in.
The Palestinian side of this, the Israelis would say the terrorism has to stop, the bombing has to stop, that's why the occupation goes on. What do you say to that?
So the occupation started before anything, and also based on the international law, we are allowed to resist in any way we want to resist. But personally, I don't believe in killing anyone, and there is no justification for killing any person around the world. And yeah, but Israelis are not killing the people, but they are bombing civilians and bombing children, and that are basically doing nothing.
Jenna, do you feel like you've been robbed of a childhood?
Of course, living under this Israeli military occupation, I don't live my childhood. I don't consider my childhood as a normal childhood, because why would a child see their mom getting killed in front of them, or their dad getting arrested in front of them, or why would they get injured because of them being in their house, because of them doing nothing? When I just go outside and play soccer with my friends on the street, Israeli occupation soldiers would sometimes come and start shooting gas canisters at me because of me playing and trying to even live my childhood, going to my school, to my school, which is, I think, the most normal thing for any child around this world. It's a struggle for us as Palestinians. We face checkpoints. A lot of our schools get raided. Children get arrested from their schools. So we are not living our childhood.
So when you hear politicians speak, I'm talking about on either side, when you hear the Israeli government speak the way they speak about Palestinian citizens, or when you hear members, when you hear Palestinians say, I'm talking about political folks and leaders, or Muslim leaders in other countries say, Israel needs to cease to exist as a country. We have to eliminate Israel. I mean, those aren't solutions.
How about the Palestinians? They also have the right to exist, and it's our land from the beginning.
Yeah, but Jenna, I'm not arguing with you. I'm not judging you. God forbid I should have to go through what you've already gone through. But
Of course, and I have no problem living with them.
Right, I understand that. So when you speak of the politicians and it's not, you know, the politics don't help, I guess that's my larger point. The greatest disservice is done to your generation, because you guys have to grow up in this scenario. And if the two political sides would stop threatening to kill each other, it seems like this could be fixed.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, of course, I don't mind living with anyone, and that's what we're fighting for. We are fighting to gain our rights back. We are fighting for all the child prisoners to get out of jail. We are fighting to get subjected to normal courts, not to get subjected to military laws or military courts as Palestinian children. And we are just fighting to remove this occupation and just live a normal life, live a normal childhood.
Is there too much pressure on you, you know, considering what we would hope you'd be able to do, just have fun and be a kid?
I am trying to be a kid as much as I can. But as I said, being a kid under occupation is very hard. And just under the Israeli military law, it says if you're 12 years old and up, you can get arrested, interrogated, treated like a criminal because you're not doing anything. A lot of children get arrested for no reason. They would say you're a security threat for them. Why? How would an 11 years old be a security threat for them? And I even was a security threat for them last year. The Israeli Ministry of Strategic Affairs made a secret report about me. But I am trying to live my childhood as much as I can. And of course, just living under occupation, it's a lot of pressure. It's very hard to see and to just lose anyone you love.
Jenna, well, we're all very impressed with your body of work. Now, you've gotten to travel a bit based on your journalism and these talks that you're going to be doing. So what do you think about Chicago so far?
I arrived yesterday. We went downtown. It was pretty cool. It's a really nice city. And today I didn't have any events yesterday, so my events are all today, and hopefully it'll go pretty good. It'll be amazing.
I guess I wanted to know kind of what you think about Americans in general.
Of course, there are a lot of good Americans, and the government doesn't represent the population, and there are a lot of amazing people here, and that's something I'm very proud of.
You know, I would say that the kids that you know, the Palestinian kids that you know and trust and love and grow up with, are probably not all that different than the Israeli kids who are the same age. And to me, the ultimate solution is your generation understanding each other better and not assuming the worst. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. And I also believe that the Israeli children are even victims of this occupation, because why would a 11 years old Israeli child be holding a weapon and be raised to kill other people? And those children are victims, and hopefully something would change and those children would also live a normal childhood, as we all wish.
Does the American government, as it stands now with Trump as president, does that come up much in discussion when you talk politics?
That unfortunately does, because Trump is trying to play the role of the mediator in this issue, but he is the Israeli lawyer, I can say. He just moved the American embassy. He is normalizing the violation of the Palestinian children's rights. He is trying to criminalize any way of resisting for us. And of course, unfortunately, he is involved in a lot of stuff.
I appreciate you coming on. It's a very difficult position to be in. Good luck tonight and tomorrow night. I know you've got two events here. And safe travels back home.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Oops, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. And I also wanted to say something about Betty McCollum's bill, H.R. 2407, which calls to end the U.S. funding for the Israeli abuse of the Palestinian children rights and lays the groundwork for achieving justice for the Palestinian children victims of the Israeli detention system, including all countries. And that's very important. And I wish that people would just, like, at least call their representatives and ask them to support or co-sponsor this bill, which is very important for us.
And you said H.R. 2407?
Yeah, Betty McCollum's bill, No Way to Treat a Child.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
There you go. It's Jana Jihad. You know, look, she's very angry, and she's very, you know, in my opinion, stressed out, and understandably. But from a distance, and it's easy to judge from a distance, there truly are good people on both sides, and that's the vast majority of people.
Absolutely. That's
who don't want to live with the threats they live under.
Absolutely. That's always the truth on every side.
My concern for her is, when I listen to her, is, and, you know, she's grown up in a situation of an occupied territory, and you could make the argument about occupation forever, that it's a terrible idea, and there's no win there. But my concern for her is she going to grow up with this anger and keep this anger, or is she going to be open-minded to a solution? Because as a kid in her position, she's already in a position to be a tremendous leader. And you could imagine an equivalent panel of kids on the Israeli side getting together with her and others to try to understand each other, as I said, a little better, because I don't know how it gets fixed without that.
Haven't there been summits where kids from both sides have been brought together?
There have. They can...
There are camps, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where, I don't know if you guys heard it. I just heard a lot of anger, and, like I said, for the sake of her own safety, I hope she's open-minded enough.
If you think about her entire childhood and... just, and the truth be told, anywhere where there is any type of police presence in general, there is, in general, an abuse of power.
No question. And for all of you who are texting in to say, fact checker, how dare you put her on? How dare you? Okay?
She lived it.
Yeah, she's living it now. If you find this show to be anti-Israeli, you're not listening. If you find this show to be anti-Palestinian, you're not listening. I would put on an Israeli child or an Israeli viewpoint anytime that it's appropriate. Appreciate your thoughts, but think before you hit send. 928, we're back in a moment on 720 WGN. 773, putting a mouthpiece advocating violent classic Jew hate on your air was a mistake. Admit it. 773, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to turn the radio off or find another show, because unless you're willing to listen and actually hear what somebody's saying and what we're saying, you're not listening. Your sensitivity, your anger. I mean, I've seen it on both sides. 630, Steve, I didn't hear the anger you heard. You got tons of people. That's the interesting thing about this place. Text by text by text, you'll see people who take one side of an issue and the next text is the opposite side of the issue, and they both hear what they want to hear. And to me, that's the great problem we live in right now, is you only hear what either angers you or what you want to hear.
Yep.
And we're not getting anywhere with that.
Yeah, and the lack of fact-finding, independent fact-finding on your own. If you're concerned about an issue, go and find the facts. Don't just make a statement without knowing what you're talking about.
Yeah, and by people saying classic Jew hate, you're spewing the exact same thing you accused a 13-year-old of doing on the opposite side. All right, we got to get to the headlines.
I'm just going to name some things. You tell me if you piv in.
Okay.
Piv out. Lip balm.
Piv out.
What?
It's sticky. It's uncomfortable. No one wins. If there's a large bee, it lands on you. It can't get off.
North Dakota.
piv in.
Okay.
Yeah, piv in.
South Dakota.
Piv out.
There you go. That makes sense. Uptown Funk.
Uptown Funk. Piv in.
Yeah, piv in.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
9:45, we continue. CLTV 720 WGN. Jeremy Piven, welcome home.
Thank you, man. It's good to be back.
What's the first thing you had to eat when you got home?
Last night I went to Sunda.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's great.
Yeah, had some really an amazing dinner. I missed it. And that was last night. And
I think it'd be fun to run into you, over at Portillo's, just getting a big old hot beef sandwich.
Yeah, I don't. You know, that makes me feel awkward to hear you say that.
Those days are over.
I just would like to watch people see you at Portillo's. That'd be entertaining to me.
Okay, I don't. You know, having me eat hot beef in front of strangers is right for you. That's something that you're gearing up towards. I love it.
I don't get out that often.
He likes when anybody does it, honestly.
Yeah, anyway, he'll observe. Let's get off the hot beef. Can we not? Let's move on.
No, I can't let you do the interview. Okay. No, let's talk about the show.
Mm.
Friday night at the Vic. Can I still get tickets?
Yeah, it's slim pickings, but I would, if, can we guide the people where to go? I know
sure.
It's thevictheater.com.
Sure.
No, the Vic Theater. Tomorrow night I'm playing the Vic Theater. I'm doing stand-up. It's an hour of stand-up. It's my dream. I mean, I grew up here going, I started at the Piven Theater and was at Second City and at a theater company with Cusack called the New Criminals. And I really owe it all to the Chicago stages, and now all of that has led to doing stand-up, and obviously doing 70 movies and TV along the way for the past few decades.
70?
I mean, that's actually trimming it down.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So, to be at the Vic Theater tomorrow night at 7 o'clock doing stand-up comedy.
I got 7:30 for the show.
I want the kids to get there early to get a good seat.
All right, fine.
You know? There's nothing better than just guiding the show yourself, doing an entire evening where it's all coming from you. You're not playing a fictional character.
Yeah.
You're not tied to other people's stuff. It's just you live or die by your own material, and I love it.
You like the thrill of it?
I do.
The high wire.
I do, because you understand in real time if it's working or not.
Exactly.
And they give you about 30 seconds of courtesy giggles, and then you gotta bring it.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about it off the air. I mean, you don't have there's a thing called celebrity laughs, and there's a million terms for it. But if you're a well-known face, you know, you can have material that maybe isn't killing, but maybe you get a little bit of rope. You're not going to get that much rope.
No.
You just don't. This is not a 7-minute set on a late night show. You got to do this for, what are you doing, an hour probably?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a real deal.
Probably longer with Chicago here because it's my hometown, and I could probably go into stories about growing up here and stuff like that. I could go on for a while, which would be really fun. And selfishly, it's like, you know, people may know me as playing Ari Gold or any of these other characters. And for me, to have them see who I am, and what I think is funny and what my actual journey's been like is just, it's a gift.
That's what I was going to ask you to follow up on that. What are you hoping the audience is going to learn about you?
I feel like I'm on the worst date I've ever had in my life. you know,
with both of us or just one of us?
Just me?
No, I just meant, it's interesting because it's a great question, and when you're up there on stage and you're just, like I said, it's not scripted. You're not tied to anyone else's thoughts, ideology, anything. It's just you, who you are. I can't tell you what specifically I hope them to take away from this other than just, you know, who I am, where I come from, what I find is funny. I feel like I'm at a dinner party right now, and I just told a joke that bombed.
No, you guys don't understand.
It's funny because here's why it's funny.
The reason I asked you that is because you were saying that you feel that people have a perception of you based on the characters you played.
Right.
And that's what I was saying. So, like, you know, are you hoping to showcase a more sensitive side or a more...
I tell you what, I do a lot of impressions because I'm trying to gear this towards something that might be funny, as opposed to, I feel like this could be the cure for insomnia. Just me trying to tell people that I'm sensitive, I'm a decent person. No one wants to hear that. Believe me.
Well, you know what
Believe me, no one wants to hear that.
You know what I'd want if I were you? I'd want people to walk out and realize how funny you are, because I've known you for a long time.
Well,
I knew you were funny off the air, but every role, well, not every role. I mean, they've done a ton of funny roles, but a lot of it was so intense that they didn't see the funny.
Well, you know, winning 3 straight Emmys in the comedy category wasn't a mistake. So I do have a little history and a reference for doing comedy.
Right.
And I do have a background at the Second City. And you know, doing 250 shows last year of stand-up and having people come up to me and say, hey, man, I had no idea how funny you were, is very confirming to me, because I've been so lucky to be a part of so many great shows and be in movies like Old School with guys like Will Ferrell and stuff like that. But to actually be guiding the show myself and revealing what I think is funny and having them connect with it, it means the world to me.
Was that a muscle you had to build, sharing yourself up there, or do you feel like it came natural for you, something you always wanted to do?
It's something I've always wanted to do. It's the same engine but a different gear. When you're up there at Second City and you're creating stuff out of thin air and you have a group of people on stage with you, you can bounce stuff off. You're doing character work. When you're on stage, you're guiding everything yourself, and it's a high wire act. And it's like, here's a terrible sports analogy. It's the difference between being a good boxer and suddenly getting in the cage and doing mixed martial arts.
Now
you have to do Muay Thai. Now you have to go to the ground and do jiu-jitsu. You got to bring judo into the game. And so that's what stand-up is, and I love the challenge, because growing up in Chicago, having this incredible town support you, because they come out and they watch you if you're in a 99-seat black box or you're at the Goodman Theater. They're coming out. So I've logged the hours, And I get to come home and play for the good people of Chicago at the Vic Theater tomorrow night.
You gonna make a dime off this? I would think the whole house would want comps. Hey, Jeremy, remember we were best friends when we were in high school? Can I get six?
You know, I think it was Jerry Seinfeld recently who said, you know, when people ask him for free tickets, he said, is that what you think I'm worth?
Oh.
And, you know, it's not a bad line.
It's strong, actually.
And there's a part of me that I just can't deny people when they want free tickets. Yeah. I just don't have it in me.
Like, is your family going to be there?
My mom, I was just with my mom who took a fall, and I posted it on Instagram. You can find me at just Jeremy Pivel.
We wish her well.
Yeah, check. Thank you so much. She's tough, man. She took a fall, and she's doing great. My sister's in L.A. I was just with all of them. So my family is out west now. So I'm here alone, but I have friends that'll be showing up. And yeah, people, you know, my friends don't pay. So I'll, you know, it's not even about.
Well, that's a good point. You don't need the money at this point. You're doing just fine. But, I'm just talking about the demand, the extra stress of, hey, can I get four? Hey, can I get two?
Four or two is good. Hey, can I get 20 last second when it's sold out? Yeah. That's when it gets awkward.
By the way, it is the Vic Theater. Vic Theater. Spell the fancy way, kids. T-R-E. VicTheater.com. Four tickets, an evening of stand-up comedy with Jeremy Piven. Yes. It is tomorrow night. Doors open at 6:30. Show starts at 7:30, but as far as you know, it starts at 7, because as you said, we want the kids to get there early.
It's good to get there early, get a great seat, and it's better to be early than late. I don't know. Just one man talking. I get paranoid when I go to the theater. I don't want to miss it.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but comedians are always students of great comedians, right?
Oh, absolutely.
So is there anybody that you are getting inspiration from or you hope to emulate? I know you're annoyed by the whole idea that you've got to describe what's going to be happening, but have we seen anything like this before?
I don't want to describe it. I'd rather, you know, if you guys want to actively do something funny, I would rather do that than, like, describe, like, why. Hey, Jeremy, tell us why you're funny. You know what I mean? Not that you would ever do that. I get a lot of that out there. And what is the set and why? How long have you been doing? And for me, it's like I would rather just start, you know, kicking around some funny stories and hang out and show people. There's a great saying, show, don't tell. And right. I would rather show as opposed to telling because, you know, then.
Well, I see this show as a chance for you to settle old scores. You know, people from the kids, people from the neighborhood that owe you money, girls that maybe said no when you asked them out, that type of thing.
It's fun because I get to do impressions. And when you start stand up, it's interesting because you don't know how much to do the impressions and how not to. And I had this guy come and he had a great note just about when you tell a story, let the spice of the story be the impression itself. Not the meat of it, you know? And so, you know, you're telling a story, and then the only way that you can make it more clear is to actually go into the impression itself. So I do everyone from, like, Owen Wilson to Mike Tyson to Stallone. I do a bunch of different, you know, a ton of them. In fact, you guys could interview me as Owen Wilson.
Give us some.
Owen Wilson, Luke's brother, is here. How do you feel about Luke? Do you feel like Luke's held you back?
Wow, he's wonderful. My brother is, you know, he's doing his thing. I feel awkward talking about my family. But, you know, I still get those checks from Marley and me. Wonderful. Wow.
You know what?
They call me the Butterscotch Cowboy.
You know what's interesting is your nose actually took a hard left while you were doing that voice.
Right, it did. Well, you know, everything's crooked. Even the urethra is crooked.
That's exactly right.
Can you say that word on the radio?
Apparently.
I think you just did.
Well, it's a technical term.
It's a technical biological term.
Right.
And you are a gynecologist. I'm just kidding.
Right, of course. All right, listen, get your tickets. Get your tickets. All I'm going to tell you is this is an opportunity, and you're going to miss the opportunity if you're not there. VicTheater.com. T-H-E-A-T-R-E. VicTheater.com. Have you ever been on stage at the Vic for anything?
I have not been on stage.
It's a great room.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait for the Vic Theater. Being on stage in a big theater like that that's so iconic in front of my people, my hometown, It just doesn't get better. It really doesn't get better, and I mean that.
Well, I
know we only have a few tickets left, so I want people to go out there and get them.
I know you're going to kill it, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Have a great night. Break a leg.
Next time I see you guys, I look forward to it. I'm going to tell you why. Because you guys are either going to go, you know what? We came to the show, Jeremy, and my God, you are viciously mediocre. And then we can go from there. Or, you know what, man? I love the part where you talked about running lines with your mom, playing Ari Gold, and you were like saying these horrible things to your mom's face, and it was so fun.
Yeah.
And then you ended with, you know, whatever. Like, that's going to be fun.
So we get comp tickets then. That's what he's saying.
No, we're paying. I am Jewish.
No, we're paying.
You'll be getting nothing.
Full price, through the nose.
Double.
And your boy Jay's open up for you?
Jay is here. He's going to crush it. He's going to warm it up.
It's going to be a big night. Going to be a big night.
Thank you, guys.
Evening of stand-up comedy with Jeremy Piven. We'll come back with Bill and Wendy next. Again, VicTheater.com. More in a moment. Tomorrow, we will be live at the WGN-TV Kids Fair. This is the back-to-school thing where kids get school supplies that can't generally afford them, and they need a little help in that area. And we will be live. I have no idea where. Somewhere on the Channel 9 property.
Uh-huh.
I'm guessing third floor.
Oh, probably, yeah.
The fair features free food and health screenings and safety tips and everything parents need. I'm going to get a hernia check and go on there. Text FAIR to 97999 to get kids' fair info and directions sent to your phone. Details at WGNRadio.com/events. We'll see you tomorrow on what should be a beautiful day. My best to your lovely fiance Chelsea. I thought she held up well under the pressure.
Thanks, Steve.
I thought Mark did well.
Thanks,
Wendy. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, I didn't mean it that
Two
way.
Two words, Annie Hall.
You meant, I you think that was a clear job. Menting right
what
there.
What are you guys doing today?
Manson talk.
Tomorrow's the 50th
Maryland?
Anniversary. No.
No.
Charles Manson, and I'm sorry that I'm one of the people who is intrigued by this whole thing. I'm not the only one. And there's an investigative journalist who was there at the murder scene 50 years ago. He's written a book. It should be very interesting.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And if you've seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Loved
the
it.
The background.
Yeah, too long.
I didn't even look at my watch
once.
Yeah,
you said you didn't even get up to pee. Too long. Yeah.
I'm a little younger than you.
I had a catheter put in. See you tomorrow. No, in general, just for a good time.
For fun.
All right. See you tomorrow.